Thanks for joining us this morning. Before I forget, I want to thank Leo from Chrissy's Towing for towing my car away when it broke down. And it's still broke, Leo. I don't know what they did to it, but I'm still without vehicle. I want to remind everybody, too, that we're doing our first fundraiser on September 8th. It'll be a Sunday brunch lecture. The attorney who's coming in to talk about it is flying in from Tacoma, Washington, and he was the attorney that took on the sex trafficking empire Backpage. And he'll also talk about the FBI takedown. We'd like to see you there. I think everybody should be there, teachers, coaches, parents, everybody. Go to the lawmatters1030.org and you can buy your tickets there. Okay, I think we've all been there. We're driving down I-10, minding our own business, and you look in the rearview mirror and you see a vehicle coming toward you and their lights are flashing. And if you're not driving too fast, you can hear the sirens. So you pull to the right so they can pass, because obviously they're on their way to an emergency, right? And you look in the rearview mirror and they're still there. So you pull off the road and you're about to meet a state trooper. And I have two of them in the office right here. We have Trooper Jonathan Barbeau.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And Captain Jeff Lane.
Yes.
And one of the things I want to talk about, all the different names you guys are called. No, don't go there. I'm talking state trooper, highway patrol. You work for the Department of Public Safety. Road warrior, road trooper. In Illinois, they called them road warriors.
Okay.
So yeah. What else do you guys get called? Nice, be nice. It's radio.
Once in a while, we get called sheriff.
Okay.
Or deputy sheriffs.
And people get confused.
Soon clarify it. They see the tan uniform.
Sheriff wears a tan uniform.
Right.
So, but your badge says trooper.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So why is there so much confusion about all the different names you guys are called? He's taking notes.
I apologize. The confusion stems from an identity crisis that we've had for quite some time. Because we are the Arizona Department of Public Safety, we are certainly recognized as being the highway patrolman out on the road, but there's many different facets for the Arizona Department of Public Safety. When it comes to trooper or highway patrolman, the difference between the two is a rebranding project.
Okay.
That came about 4.5 years ago when we went through the administration change with the new governor.
So he wants to rebrand you guys. But I think you're doing an amazing job. I've been pulled over.
And well, thank you.
Yeah, he wanted to talk. He wanted to talk about driving. So we chatted. But there's a myriad of things that you guys do, and I want to get into all of it. It's not just the highways, I-10, up and down I-10. Tell me about some of your other...
So some of the other areas that we work, besides Interstate 10, we also work Interstate 19 all the way to the point of entry. We also, for the area of Tucson or Pima County, which we work in and reside in, we also have State Route 83, State Route 86, State Route 87, 82, and I think 280, right? In the southern, is there just 82?
82, we have State Route 189.
Okay, that's the one.
Correct.
And we're talking about cell phone laws a couple of weeks ago. Do you guys pull people over being on their cell phone?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, on a daily basis, pull over people on cell phones on the highways and also on the city streets.
Do you give them a ticket or is it a warning?
As of right now, we are giving warnings just to give the public...
to be nice.
That too, and give them the education before the citations. I know Pima County already has an effect of a citation law, as well as Tucson police. But as a state, since we're spread out everywhere, we can get the information out to the public.
It's one of the things where I think when they make a law like that, it should be statewide, not, you know, Oral Valley. Mm-hmm. Don't use your phone. You'll get tagged. Some other areas, it should be everywhere.
It is now.
Distracted driving is not cool.
Based on what the legislature has put into place in April of this year, it is now a statewide law. And we will continue with the education campaign up until the January 1 of 2021. That's when the Department of Public Safety troopers.
That's too long.
I don't know what different pieces of information went into making that decision to have a lengthy education period such as that. You're not the only one who has voiced a concern of the length of time there.
Yeah.
One of the other concerns, though, as Trooper Barbeau had just mentioned, was the fact that Pima County has a cell phone law. Tucson Police Department has a cell phone law. Town of Oro Valley has a cell phone law. And although state troopers are purposely, given the authority to support state law, these other laws that are local are a little bit more tougher than the state law.
And it's going to cost you more money.
I have no idea about the fine systems.
I think it does. And I think it's distracted driving. It's not just being on your telephone. It's eating burgers, reading the newspaper, putting on makeup. I mean, all these things.
And we see it all.
All day long.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's crazy. So let me ask you something. I know we've talked about this on the show before. The protocol when somebody gets pulled over, I think the first thing you want to do is not open the door and run like hell, because that just screams guilt. So what do you expect people to do when you pull them over?
So on a traffic stop, we normally try to initiate a traffic stop in an area where we know is safe for ourselves and also the driver we're pulling over. So when we do actually activate our emergency lights, we have an area that we know is a safe location. When we turn on our emergency lights, we hopefully the driver in front of us will see the lights and start slowly making their way to the right shoulders, as actually stated in ARS.
Yeah, the move over law. Is that a different thing?
That is actually a different thing.
Okay, we'll get to that later then.
Different aspects for the move over law, when we're stopping a vehicle, we want them to move over to the right shoulder, per the statute, for any emergency vehicle, you move over to the right shoulder.
Right.
After that, we want the driver to make the least amount of movements in the vehicle as we're approaching, and then we make contact with them from there. And if we need to, we can have the driver move to a different location if they didn't stop where we hoped they would.
Do you escort them, or do you have a loudspeaker on your car?
We do have a loudspeaker on our car, but after we make the approach to contact with the driver and speak with them, from there, we'll ask them, hey, you know what? This is a really bad location. Let's move it down the roadway. I'll get their license, registration, insurance. Then after that, we continue to the other location.
You know, I'm thinking of some of the areas that you guys work. Don't you worry about snakes?
I've never had that issue before.
Ants? I'm just like, you're out in the...
Ants, but no snakes.
Ants?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so once you've got them pulled over, what do you expect the driver to do?
Hopefully, I expect the driver to not be moving around as much, because that raises a lot of questions. Moving around in the vehicle also raises our level of approach. But if they're sitting perfectly still, not moving around, make contact with the driver, talk with them, introduce ourselves, explain why we pulled them over, request for their paperwork of their license, registration, insurance, which they're required to have in their vehicle at the time of a traffic stop. And then from there, we would start going out with our paperwork, depending on what the violation was for the traffic stop.
Okay. Because I've always been told, keep your hands on the wheel. Keep your hands on the wheel so
they
can see
where your hands are. That's not a bad piece of advice. That's a safety piece of advice.
For everybody's sake.
Correct.
And then if you're going to reach for something, tell them where you're reaching, what you're reaching for, typically your license. And
oftentimes, I believe we would prefer they didn't reach for anything until we actually asked them and introduce ourselves. So otherwise, again, it kind of heightens our level of suspicion and our level of concern for our approach.
When was the last time you arrested somebody? This morning? No.
Probably wouldn't be here right now if I did.
All the paperwork involved.
Paperwork, time at the jail.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about the different aspects of driving. We were talking before the show, we were talking about driver's fatigue.
Correct, yeah.
And compare that to driving under the influence.
So drivers who are fatigued often display the same signs and symptoms and driving habits as someone who is impaired by an outside substance, whether it be alcohol or drugs. And so the dangers of driving fatigue are just as present there as if you were actually consuming alcohol or drugs. And therefore, it makes you this at the same level of a safety hazard for everyone on the road.
So what do you do when you find somebody who's fatigued, or what's the approach? Do you just...
So normally after we're done doing our investigation, finding out that they're not impaired by an outside substance, whether, like he just said, whether it be drugs, alcohol, or prescription medication, we would actually try to help the driver out if they wanted to pull off to the side of the road or pull off the side of the freeway to a local area. We would give them the directions, or actually even sit out there and talk to them for a few minutes, even after the traffic stop, try to wake them up a little bit to get them back on the road, that we know that they're at a level that they could continue on the roadway, or at least continue to a certain point on the roadway where they could actually stop.
Okay.
Do we have a concern for their ability based on their fatigue level? We will actually make arrangements that we will drive their vehicle. We will assist to get them to a location that they can either stay and they can get some rest on their own, or if they need a family member or a friend to come and get them to help them continue the rest of their trip, we'll make those arrangements with them. It's a relationship that we're here to develop with the community. So
it's called safety.
Correct.
That's right. Okay. I want to talk about, and I saw one this morning, I saw one outside the building. You have a pickup truck that, you know, a half-ton pickup truck, and it's got 2 tons of stuff piled high, 13-6, strapped down, not very well. What do you do when you see one of those on the expressway?
So when we see those vehicles, normally they have a height of 13 feet that they could actually stack whatever they want in the back of the pickup truck. Now, if we see that it's swaying or we see that it's an unsafe load, we will pull them over. Based upon the ARRA statutes of securing their load and making sure it's the correct height, and even going further, helping them out, even resecuring the load so it doesn't cause a danger or hazard to other drivers.
Well, you're a nice guy. You're going to help them secure their load.
We're all nice guys. Again, it's about the highway safety. It's about people, whether it's us driving on the road, whether we are on duty or off duty, whether it is the community, we all have obligations and things that we want to get done in each and every day. And it's just about helping each other get to the end of the day.
I think that's something people need to understand. It's a community, and if you see something, you need to call in and report it, and especially if
Absolutely.
It's something really egregious. You can't just sit back and go, oh, let somebody else do it.
And you brought up this just the security of that load. We've run enforcement details specifically in order to identify loose loads where people have actually placed things on their vehicle. They're not tied down. And debris calls are something that we get on a daily basis. With that in mind, we conducted a specific enforcement program that we put in place for a month at one time. And we reduced the amount of debris calls we received as an agency here in Tucson by about, I believe it was 35%.
That's really
roughly.
Good, actually. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, because there's always, you see these and I just cringe. What about people, you'll see a pickup going down I-10 and there's people in the back, sometimes children. Is that legal?
Yes, it is, actually.
That's is. Crazy.
If unavailable to, like you said, a pickup truck, if they don't have available seats, they may and can use the back of the pickup truck bed. There are no state laws that state that it's not allowed.
We should start a campaign, because I've seen little kids in the back of a pickup truck. They're not tied down. Yeah. They're not, you know, there's no seatbelt. There's no safety.
I think that would be another violation if you had a little kid tied down in the back of your pickup truck.
A different kind of violation.
I think so.
I'm talking seatbelts.
But I mean,
gagged.
Like you said, if there are little kids in the back seat and I see adults in the front seat, I would actually pull over that truck and question the theory behind why the kids are not in this truck where their seatbelts instead of being in the back where the adult could actually be in the back of the truck.
Yeah, because they hit a bump or something in the pothole and the kid goes flying. Good grief.
Right.
Yeah, makes no sense to me. Okay, let's talk about commercial vehicles.
Okay.
Okay, are we supposed to take a break? Let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about commercial vehicles.
Okay.
Thanks for staying with us. Today we have as our guest state troopers. He's looking at road warrior. I can call you all kinds of things. They're legit right here. Trooper Jonathan Barbeau and Captain Jeff Lane. And we're talking about traffic. I want to talk about commercial vehicles because a lot of times I'll see you guys pull over a commercial vehicle and I see like trucks. You have trucks, state trooper trucks that'll pull over a commercial
Correct.
Vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
When you pull them over, I mean, if it's not for speeding, what are you pulling them over for? Do you see infractions?
So there are different levels of certification that we have for commercial vehicle enforcement. Majority of us, we actually have a different enforcement part of our highway patrol, which is commercial vehicle enforcement.
Correct, yeah. So we have an entire section. Actually, there's two complete districts in the state that cover the state for commercial vehicle enforcement, and that is the title of their section.
So they can pull them over for no reason and just check their logbooks?
To be very honest with you, they could.
Okay.
So the way that the commercial vehicle enforcement...
They should.
They get their... A lot of their authority comes from being Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration certified. Now, that's a Federal Motor Carrier Federal Department of Transportation type agency, and they are the agency that regulates commercial motor vehicles. It regulates the industry. It helps regulate each of the carriers, the businesses themselves, what rules and regulations they have to comply with.
Does it depend on where they're coming from? Like if they're coming from Mexico, are there a different set of rules?
When they come into the United States, they have to comply with the United States rules.
Okay. All right. In different states, does it same?
So the Federal Motor Carrier rules and regulations, they apply to all 50 states, cross boundaries and everything.
Okay. I've seen trucks going down the road that say ADOT. Is that you or is that somebody else?
No, that is ADOT enforcement.
So that's a completely
different agency.
And they're going after semi-trucks or anybody?
That is their specific function is... To enforce federal motor carrier laws and Arizona state laws of motor carriers, commercial vehicles.
Do they give out tickets?
Yes, they have full law enforcement authority.
I didn't know that.
With the other caveat that they are focused in their mission for commercial vehicles. So you would not see an ADOT enforcement officer supporting or investigating criminal law.
You mean like if there was a traffic accident and there was maybe a death involved, they wouldn't get involved with that like you would?
It depends on whether or not they are enforcing or investigating a crime that occurred related to that death. Now, ADOT, again, their enforcement arm is just motor carrier safety related. They do not come out and conduct collision investigations.
Okay, I know you guys go to court a lot. Does ADOT go to court too?
I don't.
Don't know?
I don't know.
We're going to have to call them. Anybody know anything about ADOT out there? Give us a call. 790-2040. Okay. I want to talk about the move over law. So we touched a little bit on it when, mm-hmm. Okay.
So pretty much the move over law, there's differences, which I'm going to talk about that I would think the motoring public has confusion on. So we do have the first one I want to talk about is the failure to yield to an emergency vehicle, which makes you should, by the statute, move over to the right shoulder.
He followed me.
Right? to allow emergency vehicles to pass. That includes fire trucks, police vehicles, ambulances, and that's on any roadway where people should move over to the right if they can. Now, with the move over law, that actually has two parts. It's any vehicles that is stationary on the side of a roadway with hazards or without hazards on, or if a emergency vehicle is parked on the side of the highway with a stationary vehicle or by itself. Now, the two parts of the law is either to reduce the speed or if unavailable due to traffic hazards or traffic congestion, have your turn signal on and reduce your speed as much as possible. The other part to that law is to move over if you have an available lane, to make it safe if that person is changing their tire, make it safe for if there is somebody pulled over, for the officer, deputy, trooper on the roadway, and the other person that they're pulling over, make it safe for them to have that availability to move over or even see if something's coming.
Well, I've seen you guys out there changing tires. I've seen you do all kinds of things that, you know, it's like, wow, I didn't expect them to be able to do that, but you're out there helping people a lot.
I would like to just throw in the mix the move over, not the move over law, the actual yield to law enforcement vehicles or emergency responding vehicles to the right is a component that's been in place for a very, very long time.
Decades.
As we've evolved in the state in our transportation systems, as many people know, now there is an emergency shoulder off to the left. Sometimes that's even up against a barrier wall. The law still states for you to move over to the right if you can. I think that it is by the grace of the police officers that are making the traffic stops that we are recognizing the change that needs to be made when people actually choose to pull left into that emergency shoulder. But again, the law does state to move over to the right and stop.
Wouldn't it be safer because your driver's door is in the medium when you get out? I mean, for you guys, you get out.
It is safer from that perspective. However, speeds of people traveling in that lane, that's the left-hand travel lane, are higher.
The go-fast lane.
Correct. Yep. So that makes it, again, inherently more dangerous.
What do they call, we don't have them here in Tucson, the go-fast lane where you have to have more than one person in the car?
The HOV lanes, high occupancy vehicle.
Is that what that means?
Lanes.
Okay. Have you pulled people over? I know it was on the news a couple of days ago about somebody was driving in that lane and they had a blow-up doll in the passenger seat dressed up. Have you ever pulled anybody over that had, you know, mannequins or something?
So I have not. I have not worked in the state of Arizona at any location where there was those high-occupancy vehicle lanes.
Okay.
Neither have I.
So we have to get somebody from Phoenix to come down here and talk to us.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the other things you guys do, like the stadium, the bird's nest up in Glendale. I know you guys worked the Super Bowl.
Correct, yes.
I think every agency was working the Super Bowl.
Right.
That's so many people.
So the Department of Public Safety is actually the managing entity of the security system of the stadium right at the moment. That's changed hands. When the stadium was first built, that was Glendale Police Department. Since then, it has changed to us. Even when Glendale had it, and currently while we have it, it is a partnership among law enforcement agencies throughout the Valley and DPS. Honestly, I don't know about outside city agencies, whether or not they participate in that or not, but it is a multi-agency partnership.
Oh, yeah. I think for the Super Bowl, they said something like there was 3,600 law enforcement in uniform, off uniform, and it's just intermingled with everybody.
And I think with an event as large as a Super Bowl event is, agencies that don't usually participate in the security of a regular football game or something going on at that stadium, they actually open the door for many more agencies to become involved on
that. Raytheon personnel there. I mean, you know, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
It was so well managed. It was just, everything was like clockwork. It was amazing.
It's interesting to watch a Super Bowl preparation system come into play because the whole thing is governed by federal law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual preparation and planning on that is at least 12 months before the event itself. So yeah, they're hoping for that smooth transition when the day comes and everybody goes to work.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I was impressed. I want to talk about the Amber Alert, those signs with the messages. Mm-hmm. Are you the agency that holds the contest every year for messages that go up there about driving drunk and all that stuff? Or
no, that would actually be ADOT.
ADOT?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Who's in charge of the Amber Alerts?
So now the Amber Alert system, we are in charge of regulating what constitutes an Amber Alert or a Silver Alert.
And or a Blue Alert. What's a Blue Alert? I stumped you.
So
you
a Blue Alert is when...
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, so a Blue Alert is when an officer down or something involving law enforcement.
Okay. Where they're actually looking for a suspect vehicle or something of that nature. Okay.
So if there's anything misspelled on those big signs, it's ADOT's fault, right? I just...
Don't want to place blame on you, but...
Okay. Okay, let's talk a little bit. Let's go to break. When we come back, let's talk about the safety corridor. Okay, thanks for staying with us. And I want to hear about that, what you just said.
Okay. So prior to coming back on air, we ended up talking about the Law Matters.
The fundraiser
that you have coming up. Yes. So what I'm interested in is hearing the experiences that he had to go through as far as choosing to go after Backpage and all the challenges that he faced. Now, here in Arizona, the Department of Public Safety has a interdiction for the protection of children program. And all of the troopers, at least at one time, I know we occasionally have new troopers coming in and coming out of the academy, but at some point in time in their career, they're going to be trained on how to identify key factors that would suggest they have a child here that's not necessarily in the right location with the right people at the right time.
That's very cool. I think all the agencies, and I've been talking about this fundraiser for weeks, I think everybody should be there, especially parents. I've had people say, oh, my kids live at home, I don't have to worry about it. Oh, yes, you do. Absolutely, you do.
It's a false sense of security.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Back to driving.
Okay.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you about, where'd I put my note? I wanted to talk to you about your badge, about hiring, about the patch and your flag. I want to talk about all this stuff. Let's start with your badge. I told you there was going to be a quiz. So tell me what the badge represents.
So the badge, it's our 7-point badge, and actually each point represents a different acronym of justice.
Okay, can you go through them?
So starting with justice being on the top of the badge, we embrace the qualities of fairness, equality, quickness in protecting the rights of people we serve, undaunted commitment. We demonstrate moral and physical courage, vigilance.
There you go.
Right? And diligence. Have two of those right now. And duty performance. Service. We deliver exceptional service assistance through teamwork and cooperation. Trust. We strive to earn and keep the confidence of the people we serve through truthfulness, communication, and reliability. Integrity. We are honest, factual, and accountable while being an example of excellence on and off duty. Courtesy. We are respectful and polite to everyone. And empathy. We are compassionate and respectful in all that we do.
You guys are really polite.
I've only
been pulled over once by a state trooper, but he was the nicest guy.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And with that, as it being the acronym for the 7 points of our star, it is also our core values.
Okay. So let's talk about the hiring process for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know you're hiring.
Correct.
What do people have to do to prepare to be hired by the Department of Public Safety?
So, first of all, you would put a job interest card on our AZDPS webpage, azdps.gov.
Okay.
From that job interest card, we actually have a portion that if you're interested in becoming a state trooper, we have information regarding your physical fitness, your background information, and also your education. So,
do you have to have a college degree?
No, you do not. High school diploma or GED.
Okay.
At least 21 years of age before graduation.
Okay.
Of the academy itself. Other than that, there's a fitness level that you have to meet for the requirements for entry.
Tell me about the fitness part.
So the fitness aspect is actually changing. Everything used to be run, push-up, sit-ups. Where that would be the actual start for the test, we're actually moving towards a more, we are performance athletes. So we are moving towards not just push-ups, sit-ups, runs. We are kind of merging into that CrossFit type program. But at the same time, we still have assessment tests that we have for our, which are called the POPAT test and our FitForce test.
And what does that consist of?
So,
you have to run. How far do you have to run?
So,
and do they time you?
So, oh, yes. Some of the tests.
Because I'd still be going. Oh, she's not here yet.
So the POPAT test, which is the police officer's aptitude test.
Okay.
And that one actually gives you different scenarios, like a 6-foot wall jump with a 25-yard run after that for time, a 99-yard obstacle run, which also gives you kind of ducking through buildings, jumping over curbs, and jumping through a wall before a nice dash afterwards. We also include a 500-meter dash for time. So, and those are all points-based.
Wow. And how many points do you have to get in order to graduate from this if you're not dead before you get
for the POPAT test is a pass or fail test.
Oh.
So if you don't pass it, you have a retry afterwards. And from there, it most likely would mean dismissal from the academy.
So the smart thing to do is prepare yourself before you go down there. Now, what kind of written test, do you have to take?
So the written test is a basic...
it's a basic civil service test. And when somebody would apply for the agency, they would put an application in, like Trooper Barbeau had mentioned. You've got the job interest card that you can put in, or there's applications you can actually fill online at azdps.gov. That is a website that is for our agency. It has a lot of information that can be retrieved through that about what the job entails, what the duties of a trooper are. And then you would go through the application process. If you are selected as a qualified applicant, then you would end up going through a basic civil service exam. And then that's just a very general exam about math, English, history, those types of topics.
And you know, they have samples of these exams online. If you're going to go do this, prepare, don't just show up.
Absolutely. Preparation is key, both physical and academic.
And I think more the physical part. So if you want to wear a Smokey Bear hat and badass boots, apply.
Right.
Okay, Ingrid's on the phone. Ingrid, what's on your mind?
Good morning. A minute ago, you were talking about physical agility and so forth. And I've been thinking about that poor fellow, the officer, who managed, for some reason, to be stuck to a vehicle and get driven by a lunatic in a car.
Oh, that was on the news this morning.
Yeah, it was trying to shake the guy off the car, and the officer was hanging on for dear life. He must have been very powerful, and he survived that impact with another vehicle. And he's in the hospital, but laughing and saying he's going to come back in wonderful condition.
Yeah, so hats off to him.
How did that? How did he get into such a situation where he was stuck? Having to hang on to a car, why aren't people drivers told to get out of the car?
Okay, so unfortunately, I do not know the situation that you were talking about, but I'm glad that the law enforcement officer will be okay and will be coming back to the work here shortly. But as far as your question goes, most of the time we either can choose to either keep the driver in the vehicle, depending on the area, depending if there's other occupants in the car, or we could have the driver step out of the vehicle. Now, if the driver drove off, like I said, I don't know the circumstances behind this, but if the driver took off, the officer wanted to stop him for some reason and attempted to.
There were two officers there. From the news report, the man was supposed to do something and he reached into his car. The officer reached into his car. The guy decided to take off with the officer hanging on and rammed him into two other trucks as he was pulling away, and the officer eventually fell onto the highway,
right,
onto the ground. But he's okay, beat up. They had a picture of him, but he was like, I'm coming back. He called him knickknacks, little knickknacks, I'm coming back. And his face
That's
is
amazing.
All bruised.
Wow.
Yeah, and that just speaks to why. And I know before the show started, you were talking about you have to redo your physical fitness thing. That isn't a one and done. It's a continuation of constantly being physically fit and staying in shape, just like the FBI.
You need to stay fit throughout your entire career, because you never know when an event such as this officer had to get involved in is going to occur to you. So
His stamina was something else. I just, wow.
And it's a testament to not only him and his agency, but law enforcement officers nationwide. It's incredible to think of the men and women who wake up every morning or every day knowing they're going to put that badge and gun on and go out and potentially risk themselves.
Yeah, you don't
for the
know
citizens.
What's going to happen. Wasn't that in Kentucky, Ingrid?
I'm sorry. Is there time for one more quick question?
Sure.
Are children allowed on motorcycles if they're allowed in the bed of a truck? You know, where you have all these special seats for kids and it has to be like this and like that, but you can put them in the bed of a truck. Are they allowed on the back of a motorcycle?
So as far as I know, there are no regulations on a child actually being on the back of a motorcycle as long as they're wearing the proper protection of either of wearing the helmet and eye protection.
It's crazy, isn't it, Ingrid? Oh, she hung up.
Oh.
And John's telling me now she's gone.
We'll agree with you. It's crazy.
Okay, it's kind of crazy.
It is.
As a parent, you have to be a little more responsible, I would think. You don't want to put your kid in danger. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Okay, thank you for staying with us. We are here today with Trooper Jonathan Barbeau.
Yes, ma'am.
And Captain Jeff Lane.
Yes, ma'am.
And we are talking about everything we should know regarding the Department of Public Safety and state troopers, road warriors. What else do we? Road trooper.
Yep.
Highway patrol.
And those are the polite names.
All you guys.
Right?
Yeah. Those are the ones we can say on air. And I want to talk a little bit about, I see these signs that say safety corridor. And I'm like, okay, I feel safe here. But
okay. You
know, we're going to patrol this area. But back there, I wasn't patrolled, so I could have gotten away with all kinds of stuff back there. But over here, I have to behave. What is a safety corridor?
So a safety corridor is was made by ADOT with a conjunction of statistics from the Department of Public Safety in conjunction with ADOT. For the locations that we've had our most serious collisions to include several fatals. So within that safety corridor, it allows us with ADOT to actually perform higher enforcement in those areas with zero tolerance.
Okay.
So what it means is we'll be in those areas and there is no ands, if or buts. If you are speeding five over, it's zero tolerance.
So you have to really behave in a safety corridor.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, I'll try. Okay. What about on the news, and I've seen this so much lately, wrong way driving.
Right. Wrong way driving right at the moment is one of the primary causes of fatalities right now. It's actually a nationwide problem. We're not exactly sure. I don't think anybody has totally come up with a good method to stop it from occurring before it does. One of the things we need is primarily with wrong way drivers is partnering with the community. We need to know as soon as somebody ends up recognizing this could go wrong. We also need to partner with the community as far as just recognizing the people if they've been drinking too much. There's several reasons why the wrong way drivers are out there. But the primary one is impairment. So if you have an opportunity to prevent a friend or a family member or someone drive impaired, then absolutely take that information and prevent them, or let us know to be on the lookout for this, because it is right now one of the largest reasons that we are having fatality collisions.
That's crazy. They had a while back, I remember an elderly woman mm-hmm. with dementia.
Correct, yeah.
Yes, that happens. And, that wasn't something that was deliberate or impaired, but she shouldn't be driving at all.
And that's where we rely a lot on the family and the care facilities to just kind of monitor their family members and the people that they're responsible for, because these events do happen. And yes, indeed, it is the dementia, it is the Alzheimer's, things such as that, which is definitely a component of this.
And I've said it before on air, if you're a family member and you're really concerned about your aunt, uncle, mother, father, grandparent, you don't have to be the bad guy. You can have the state say, hey, you can't drive anymore. Right. All you have to do is make those arrangements, and they'll do it for you, because yes. you know better than anybody else whether they're capable of driving
right.
a
yes.
two-ton
Correct.
Vehicle. What about seatbelts?
So seatbelts is actually one of our priorities, and it's something that we would like to see more people actually wearing on the state highways, due to majority of the collisions that we see, fatal collisions on, are people not wearing their seatbelts.
That's insane. I can't believe it's still an issue that people don't wear their seatbelts. First thing you do is put on your seatbelt.
I agree with you. So when we talk of the safety corridor and we talk of the wrong way driving, we talk about seatbelts, they are all significant components in our desire and our attempt to reduce collisions and reduce fatalities. But I will tell you for certain, since I have had the opportunity to hold my position, I've recognized seatbelts is by far the largest reason behind fatality traffic collisions. Everything, I don't want to diminish the other things, but when it comes to statistically, people can survive these collisions if they were just wearing their seatbelts. And I don't think a lot of people put a lot of thought into it, or at least there's a portion of the community that doesn't put a lot of thought into it. Just think about the fact that if you are here today and not here tomorrow, what is that? What kind of impact is that going to have on society? What kind of impact is that going to have on your family? And all it is putting a piece of cloth across your shoulder and across your lap.
I can speak firsthand to that. My brother was rear-ended by a dump truck, and his car flipped over. Mm-hmm. Had he not had his seatbelt on, he would have been dead.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he was dizzy, mm-hmm. a little whiplash, right. But he was alive.
See, what I think people don't realize is that while they're driving a vehicle at 40 miles an hour, 65 miles an hour, 75 miles an hour, that if you're not wearing your seatbelt, if anything happens on the roadway, where it be that they're trying to avoid a collision, trying to avoid debris, need to slow down immediately, that they don't realize that their body is going to be going that same speed inside the vehicle. It's just like how I try to tell children when I do career days talks at schools, that if you're not going to ride a roller coaster without the safety bar, why are you going to drive in a car that could go the same speed or even faster without a seatbelt?
Without a seatbelt. That's a good analogy.
Very good.
I'm going to steal that. That's
right?
good. Yeah, that makes sense. So what else do you want to tell everybody before? Have you delivered any babies?
I have not delivered any babies on
duty. No?
Thankfully, not anytime soon.
Thank God for the pregnant nope. woman, right? Are you guys married?
Yes, I'm married. I have two grown children.
Three children.
And when I've said this before, because I was married to law enforcement, the whole family is married to law enforcement.
Absolutely.
So yes, she tells me every day.
And I'm here to remind you she's right. And we've got Bob on the phone. Bob, what's on your mind?
All right. Hey there. Hey, quick question. What's the difference between, like, with the sheriff's department? What do they do different than the regular police department? What are the sheriff's responsibilities?
Everything else.
So it's very interesting. So the way that law enforcement is set up in Arizona is that the sheriff's department is a primary law enforcement entity in each of the counties. So we have 15 counties in Arizona, and the sheriff's department is the primary authority. The way that the Arizona Department of Public Safety was mandated through the legislature is that we did not have primary jurisdiction statewide. So we are not a state police agency. We are a Department of Public Safety. And with being a Department of Public Safety and the Highway Patrol, and I keep jumbling the terms again, and I apologize, or state troopers.
Road warriors.
We have responsibilities on the state highway system. So there is, as you notice going down the road, there is the right-of-way fence on the left side of the road and on the right side of the road. Everything in between that right-of-way fence, we have primary responsibility for when it comes to traffic-related situations. When it comes to other criminal-related situations, then we defer to the county to see whether or not it is an investigation they want to take on.
I want to ask you about aircraft. You guys have airplanes that monitor the expressways?
Actually, we don't have aircraft for that, but we do have our... a rescue, right?
Air rescue.
Our air rescue.
So you have to be in trouble to get a ride?
Or injured.
Yes.
Injured? How many thousands of dollars would that cost?
Well, so we used to...
they'd call it the bear in the air.
Right. My knowledge of it is it's a program that is no longer implemented because of cost put a plane in the
air. Expensive.
Used to be years ago that we would have a fixed wing airplane that would travel around the state, and we would actually hold enforcement details utilizing that plane. But it's cost preventative right now.
So they have to raise taxes to get a new plane or something, right?
I don't want to go down the raise taxes avenue, but...
Don't go there.
Right.
Don't tell anybody. Okay, I really want to thank you guys, and I want to emphasize that this luncheon that we're having, this brunch, is an educational opportunity for everybody. And, you know, I know you know how serious it is to... Before we leave, we only have a couple minutes left. We were talking about human trafficking and smuggling.
Correct.
Tell us the difference.
Go ahead.
Okay.
So,
somebody.
Human smuggling is where a person takes them across the border, gets paid for taking them to a certain location. So with human trafficking, it's where they're pretty much human slaves is the difference between the two.
Okay, I want people to understand what human slaves entails. And it's not just the sex that, you know, is primary mm-hmm. with this situation, but it could be...
It could be a certain workforce. It could be that they would be working for a entity, company, person, where they have no human rights.
And they don't really get paid for anything. That you owe me, so you're going to do this.
Pretty much, I brought you into a different location. I brought you into the States. You're mine.
You're mine. Yeah, that's pretty sad. And I want to emphasize, go to lawmatters1030.org under the upcoming events. You can buy tickets for this. There's more information on there about the event that's coming up. It's an educational opportunity to find out what's going on currently with sex trafficking, what you need to watch out for. Parents, you need to know what's going on. And this isn't just girls. Boys have been sex trafficked as well. So it's something that everybody needs to know what's going on, so you know what you're looking at and you know what to report when the time comes that, or you see something that is significantly out of character for people. Thank you.
Do I have a second?
You do.
Sure. I'd just like to add, so anyone who is interested in learning more information about the Department of Public Safety, we have our office here in Tucson. They can certainly...
You do? Where is it?
It's over at Tucson Boulevard in Valencia.
Okay.
They can certainly phone call in and ask questions, come down, talk with us, or even come down for a ride along.
Oh, that would be fun.
Ride with a trooper and see what we do firsthand.
Okay, until next week, shop local, stay safe.